This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. James Maxey writes fantasy novels. You're more likely to encounter magic and dragons in his books than the harsh reality of fatal illness. But when the woman he loved died of cancer, James found a way to memorialize his struggle in writing. On the surface, Burn, Baby, Burn is the story of two supervillains named Sundancer and Pit Geek. One can harness the energy of the stars to generate extreme heat. The other can eat anything and is practically invincible. Burn, Baby, Burn is just one of James Maxey's new novels. It's already out. But this month, another novel called Great Shadow will also be released. James Maxey is with us in the studio to tell us more. Welcome back. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Burn, Baby, Burn is the sequel to another novel you wrote called Nobody Gets the Girl. Tell us about Burn, Baby, Burn.
Well, when I wrote Nobody Gets the Girl, the very closing scene of the book has two supervillains, Sundancer and Pit Geek, who've survived their battles with the superheroes. And Pit Geek says, next time we should rob some banks. And so for the last 8 years, anytime I've walked into a bank, I've looked around and thought, man, if I had superpowers, I could totally rob this place.
But you don't, and you haven't. We should point
that
out.
I haven't.
Just so that we can finish this segment unmolested. But you did. So then you – now, did you have that sequel in mind as you were writing the book, or did that come to you?
I did not. It sort of developed more naturally where I left it open where the villains could come back. But I didn't know at the time that the book would be about the villains. But – in one of the moments where, you know, you always have, you know, all good news always seems to be matched by bad news. I was involved with a woman named Laura who, when I met her, she had had breast cancer, but she was cancer free at the time. And on the day that I got the contract for publishing Nobody Gets the Girl, she was diagnosed that her cancer had returned. And so she lived another 3 years, and during that time, I felt like I learned a lot about love that I didn't know. I really, we weren't married, but I started really understanding the whole in sickness and health part of the vow, that, you know, there are going to be times when, you know, when it's not going to be an equal partnership, when one person is going to need something, and that's where, you know, where the real where you really have to find out, you know, if you have the strength to stay there and see someone through this and be there to help someone, you know, transition from this life. And I really, as this was happening, I really wanted to write about it. And so I had the supervillain novel in mind, and I started thinking, okay, well, what if Sundancer, as the supervillain, winds up with cancer? And I started building the story around that because, as you say, I also write fantasy novels. But in fantasy, it would be almost impossible to have someone die of cancer. You know, my characters die by getting eaten by dragons, but – you know, but there are emotional connotations that come from chemotherapy and CAT scans and sitting in a hospital waiting room, waiting for news of the results of surgery that I just couldn't put there. But in the supervillain novel set in a modern world, I could kind of work through these things.
And so supervillain, it has elements of fantasy, to be sure. We just don't
know. Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, these are larger-than-life characters who can fly and, you know, who can shrug off gunshot wounds. But in a way, it sort of adds to the irony that they have, you know, these godlike powers. But at the same time, you know, something like cancer is, you know, you can't get away from it. You know, the book has, it's, I think the book is a very upbeat, funny book, but it also, was a book that I went into knowing that it would not have a happy ending for one of the characters.
Right. And she gets Sundancer, gets cancer because of her superpower.
Yes. Yeah. Her superpower is basically every time she uses them, she's accelerating her own death.
Because she draws energy from the stars, which
right.
is radiation. And so you don't always think about that with a superhero. You think, well, if
right.
I got my superpower, it means I'm immune from the normal.
Right. And she is someone, her character is someone who doesn't have a lot of empathy for other people at the beginning of the book. She's a very radical political figure who believes that all of society is corrupt and should be torn down. And she robs banks not for the money, but to spread the fear that so people won't think that their money is safe. And so she's really wanted to tear down society. But then, then the illness is changing her, you know, as well as Pit Geek, as they are starting to, you know, think about, man, you know, we've caused other people to be sitting in the hospital waiting for news of what's going to be the fate of their loved ones.
In some ways, a little like the journey of the writer, realizing that when reality sinks in, you find yourself a kind of whole new being.
Yes.
You published this. Now, you talked about Nobody Gets the Girl. The fact was that it did get a publishing contract,
yes.
But you've chosen to publish your latest book, Burn, Baby, Burn, as an ebook. Why?
Well, since I republished Nobody Gets the Girl as an ebook, it has sold pretty nicely, and now there is like this whole genre of superhero ebooks out there. There was a time when I could count all superhero books on the fingers of one hand, and now about a dozen appear every month. And so Amazon has definitely built a market for these things, and there was just something very nice. I wrote the book very quickly. I had been thinking about it for 8 years, and so when I finally sat down to write it, I wrote the first draft in a week, and was able to revise it and have it in print. I wrote it second week of August, and I had it in print and available to readers on November 1st. And in traditional publishing, you know, it's normally 18 months between right. something, you write something, you see it.
Well, tell us about this writing process. You wrote it in a week.
Yes. I have a day job, and so normally most of my writing just takes place in stolen moments. And I have, you know, some days I set aside just to write. And I normally write about 1,000 words an hour. And I've always wondered what would happen if I treated writing as a day job and I didn't have to go off to work and I would get up in the morning and clock in and write for 8 hours day after day. You know, would I, you know, could I get 40,000 words out in a week? The company I work for gave me 2 weeks notice in July that they were going to shut down the work site to put in new equipment. And so I was going to have a week of unexpected leave, and I had no vacations planned. All my friends and family were going to be working, so I was just going to be home completely free, and I could have just sat around and watched movies. But instead, I thought, okay, this is it. This is where I find out. Can I write a book in a week, or at least 40,000 words? And I wound up pushing through and made it all the way through.
Not a solid week of World of Warcraft.
Not a solid week. It was.
You actually did it. You had fantasized that you would do it, and I did it.
It was. I not recommending it as a process for other people to emulate. I think that. I felt my brain devouring itself at a certain point.
Will you read for us from Burn, Baby, Burn? What do you have?
I did not bring a reading from Burn. I have a reading from Great Shadow, actually.
All right. Well, let's do that. But let's talk about that a little bit first, because, again, your real life intervened in the writing of your book that's about to be released.
So with Great Shadow, it's the story. I strip fantasy down to its most basic element, and I have a very powerful dragon named Great Shadow, who is the primal dragon of fire, and his spirit is present in every flame, so every candle that a man lights, Great Shadow is there waiting to pounce on him if he gets careless with fire. And so in the book, 12 super-powered adventurers team up to go kill Great Shadow. And one of these characters is named Infidel, and she is super strong and invulnerable. And her best friend, Stagger, is the narrator of the book. Stagger has been in love with Infidel for 10 years, and he completely, you know, just worships her and enjoys her company, but he's never said, "Infidel, I love you," because he values her friendship so much that he worries he would drive her away. And so I'm writing this story of this unconfessed love at the same time that I've been best friends with a woman for about 3 years. I met a woman named Cheryl about 6 months after Laura passed away. And at the time, I liked her, but I told her I just was not ready to date. And, you know, could we just be friends? And she was like, sure, let's be friends. And in most of my life's experience, when a woman says, yes, let's be friends, I never hear from them again. But Cheryl and I actually became friends. You know, we went hiking together and we'd sit around and watch TV together. And because I wasn't trying to date her, I was just very open with her and wasn't constantly trying to impress her. And so we developed this very deep friendship, and we both went on and dated some other people. And I was out on a date and I was thinking, you know, the woman I would really like to date would have this attribute and this attribute and this attribute. And I was like, oh, wait, I know that woman. But at this point, I was like, I'm afraid to tell her that I love her because, you know, what if now she knows too much about me? I haven't been trying to impress her. She knows the real me. And so when I was writing Great Shadow, I reached a point where I thought, you know, Cheryl's going to read this. And is she going to think this is about her? And then I thought, is this about her? Is this about us? And so I wound up telling her how I felt, and turned out she felt the same way. And so we were married this year on November 11th.
Congratulations. Will you read for us?
Yes. So one of the parts of the book is that Stagger narrates the entire book, but he passes away in the first chapter. He and Infidel have just robbed a pygmy temple, and they're fleeing through the jungle when they fall into a river and they get swept over a waterfall. That's no problem for Infidel since she's super strong and invulnerable, but Stagger almost drowns. Stagger is also upset because when he falls in the river, he loses a knife that his grandfather gave him 40 years ago. And just as he's about to lose consciousness, Infidel grabs him, slings him over her shoulder, and carries him ashore. Infidel laid me on a beach of black sand, then straightened, shaking her head to get the hair from her eyes. She looked as soggy as a drowned rat. Her torn pirate blouse hung from her arms like flaps of skin from a once fat man. Her hair was plastered to her scalp. Despite her sorry condition, her waterlogged clothes revealed the magnificent paradox of her body, the sleek and sultry curves that set atop angular iron muscles. I spotted something amiss on her flawless form. A dark red stain glistened atop her left shoulder. Though I could barely breathe, I sucked in a spoonful of air, the effort making me tremble. I whispered, "You're bleeding." She frowned as she followed my gaze to the crimson circle that seeped out across her blouse in ever-lightening shades of pink. Her eyes grew wide. Her face turned pale as she pushed the remnants of her pirate blouse down her shoulder, revealing streaks of red across her ivory skin. She wiped away the blood with her fingers, leaving behind smooth, unblemished flesh. She looked back at me, her face turning whiter still. I looked down. I understood why I couldn't breathe. The good news was I'd found my knife.
James Maxey reading from the novel Great Shadow, coming out this month. You can see him at Quail Ridge Books February 10th at 7:30 for the book launch. See, I've always thought that when fantasy works for me, it works because there's an allegory. Now, it may be one that I've created in my own mind, but there's allegory. And then here's my fantasy, that fantasy writers don't see that. That the allegory, that the thing that it's like in real life is absolutely concealed from the writer. And that's what makes great fantasy. And now here you are crashing through the wall twice.
Right.
I mean, if I'm right about that, if great fantasy is the concealment of the inner life from the writer, and you now know, has that affected you?
No, I don't know that I was ever having my motives concealed. I mean, with Burn Maybe Burn, I knew what I was writing about. I think that the effort, the challenge is to make it interesting to readers. You know, I don't want to just go out and, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with just telling your story flat out and being straight and confessional about it. But I like to write stuff that is thought provoking and moving, but it's kind of like fruit that can have the the fiber and the vitamins in it, but you also need that sugar in there. And so for me, the sugar for my superhero novels are all these flamboyant superhero battles. And so, you know, with the fantasy novels, you know, you get the dragons and you get the larger than life heroes and the great big set pieces that, you know, are a lot of fun for the reader. And then I just hope as the readers go along, they also find themselves thinking about these deeper issues of love and, you know, if I can be pretentious, the meaning of life.
It's all there. And, one note here, you're publishing ebooks and you're going to be at Quail Ridge, which is a local bookstore, mm-hmm. and there is now technology available for local bookstores to get commissions mm-hmm. on ebooks. And it's a kind of a new technology, but it sounds very cool.
Yeah, I think that ebooks are pretty transformative because they're creating this infinite bookshelf. Before, literature was limited by the amount of shelf space that bookstores could have, and so you wound up getting very safe books published. The only books that could get published would be books that were like something that had been published before that they knew could sell, and only a few books that were different could break through. Now you really have the freedom to write anything that you dream of. And Amazon will find an audience for you. And I think that the bookstores that will do well are going to be the ones that make it that A, provide a very good browsing space, and B, are also able to do a good job of hooking up the readers with potential books that they would like.
Yeah, and check with your local bookstore to find out about ways that you can actually commission the local bookstore for a Kindle-like download. James, so good to have you on the program again. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
James Maxey's new novels are Burn, Baby, Burn and Great Shadow. Burn, Baby, Burn, already available in ebook format. Great Shadow released later this month. James is going to be at Quail Ridge Books February 10th at 7:30 for the launch of Great Shadow. That's the state of things for today. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.